the same as they are in trying to educate politically. The battle to educate and keep educated, keep people educated, is an endless, not lifelong, but eternal struggle that can never be resolved at any point where you can say you now have the necessary preconditions to a free society, that we now have enough people in agreement and so forth. So let's look at the second method, which is power, meaning force, that we will get the power to set up our society the way we want to and not allow anybody to encroach upon it because we have the power to protect ourselves, meaning we're capable of defending ourselves. And of course, that's what makes our power right, that we are merely defending ourselves from those who would take it away from us. We don't want Lyndon Johnson's White House. He can continue to live there. He can do anything he wants, but just don't come and get my Black House. I'm going to defend it. And we have set up a society that has the capability of defending itself, and therefore, we are now able to keep them out. And even because there's only 100 of us, our technology is so great because we're such great people that we have conceived of ways of protecting ourselves against the other 190 million who would like to come and take it away from us and so forth. All right, but recognize one thing. You are keeping others from practicing their morality. But of course, that's what they were trying to do to you anyway. So I'm not saying it's wrong for you to do so. I just want it to be recognized for what it is, that you are trying to keep them from practicing what they think is moral in the same way that they now are keeping you from practicing what you think is moral. And recognize this. If you have the power to do it, to set up this society that you want and preserve it from those who would take it from you, then recognize, too, that it really doesn't matter how right you are, because the power will supersede the right. All questions of rights are really meaningless. Suppose you have the power to set this up and protect it, but you don't have the right to do so. What will be the result? Well, you'll have what it is you wanted. Suppose you have the right to do so, as evidenced in the Declaration of Independence or some other worthy document, but you don't have the power. Well, you won't get it. Well, suppose you have the power and the right. Well, then you'll get it. Suppose you don't have either the power or the right. Well, then you won't get it. Well, of course, the constant here is the power, not the right. That if you've got the power, you'll get it. If you don't have the power, you won't get it. The rights become meaningless. Now, it means that the concept of rights is irrelevant. Do I have a right to my life, my liberty, my pursuit of happiness, and so forth? Well, if a man shoots me dead and murders me, no matter how wrong he was, I am dead. And I can't have a right to my life unless I am capable of protecting it from those who want to take it away from me. I don't have a right to my property unless I'm capable of protecting it from those who want to take it away from me. Well, I can say I have a right, but what meaning does it have? Actually, let us first define the word power as unobstructed resources, meaning you have the resources, the time, energy, the knowledge, the property, the money, whatever it is in the way of resources, and there are no obstructions in the way. That is power. You have the power to do something if you have the resources to do it, and there are no obstructions preventing it. Now, to follow through then, the concept of rights has no practical value because in every case it will be superseded by the question of power. Does the power exist to do it? Now, there is a reason for outlining rights, and I'll come back to that later when I think it can be dealt with then in a more realistic context. But for the moment, let's recognize that any societal rights that are trumpeted by an individual saying, I have a right to my life, a right to my property, and so forth, all of this is meaningless in the real world because you don't have a right to anything that somebody is capable of taking away from you. You can say afterward that they are the outlaw, that they are wrong, that it was a crime, all of these things, but it doesn't change the essential fact of life that the act has taken place, and if it's murder, it's irreversible. You have no right to your life if you've been murdered. All right, then. We're going to try to create a society where property is respected, and the only way we can do so is by acquiring the power, whether that be simple defensive force, the ability to defend ourselves against anybody taking it or whatever. Well, how do we then, since the one standard we're agreeing on is respect for property, how are we going to, within that society, enforce the respect for property? Because we're not trying to create it on the assumption that all of us have suddenly become perfect, that none of us ever make mistakes, or that not one of us will suddenly decide that it might be more profitable to him to be a thief than to be a good man. So there has to be a method of enforcing it. And this, of course, is where any kind of a societal structure always introduces the concept of courts, or man-made justice, or adjudication, or legal system, whatever it may be. the purpose being to settle disputes.